Welcome to the Rosman Experience with your host, Rick Rosman. For the past 32 years, Rick has been a well-known name in the world of finance. He continues to follow his passion for volunteering and working with charitable and nonprofit organizations. His dedication to education and the youth of the Los Angeles area knows no bounds. He loves his work and strives every day to make a difference in the world. We invite you into the Rosman Experience to enjoy Rick and his many guests who will be bringing you their stories of philanthropy and volunteerism and introducing you to the many ways you can become involved in your community. It's time for your host, Rick Rosman.
Hey, hello. Hello, everybody. Hey, everybody out there in blog radio land. This is Rick Rosman coming to you from the Rosman Experience. I'm just going to backtrack for a minute. I right now am in a hotel in Beijing, China. And that gives you an idea of the technology that we have. Technology can make it as if I'm in your backyard, as if I'm next door, as if I'm in a restaurant breaking bread with you. And that's the whole idea with this, is to get to know everybody out there and to get them to think a little bit differently. Hey, we're at the end of 2012. Now, I know that many of you were probably looking at that Mayan calendar thing and going, oh, my God. I had to tell some friends because there's what is called the International Dateline. The International Dateline means that I'm a day ahead here. So I'm on Monday morning at 8 o'clock here while it's on California time. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I had to remind some of my friends who were freaking out about the Mayan calendar. I said, look, it's already the 22nd in China. You know what? The world didn't come to an end, and we're still here. I want to wish everybody happy holidays, whatever that holiday celebration is, whether Hanukkah, Christmas, or some other form of celebration. It's the end of the year and time for goals and dreams. And I hope everyone out there, that's what I do. Sheila and I sit down, and matter of fact, we've been talking about it, kicking it around. What are we going to do in 2013? What are the goals? It's been sort of proven that if you have written goals and you discuss them, you've got more opportunity of reaching them than just saying wishes. Wishes do not come true. Write the goals down, figure it out, develop a bucket list, and go for it. I want to make one comment about what happened in Connecticut. Our hearts go out to the parents, the grandparents, to all the community, and to communities everywhere, to children everywhere, that this isn't the America that we all know. And I hope the politicians and I hope the bureaucrats and everybody else, they can get together and come up with a solution for the senseless violence that we all witness. And if there's a way for us to reach our prayers out to those in Connecticut, please, please accept our prayers and condolences. Thank you. All right, now, the Rosman Experience. I just got some great news. Rosman, I'm on the Rock Biz magazine cover. That just was announced today. And if you want information on it, go to info@easywaybroadcasting.com. That's info@easywaybroadcasting.com. By the way, this show is interactive. And after we go through it for a while here, you can call in at 914-338-1303. And interact with me and any guests we have and Eric, the producer, and we'll try to have some fun with this. This is my third edition of the show. And so here's the day. I'm going to talk a little bit about me. Financial advisor. I've been a financial advisor for almost 33 years and with a major firm out on the west side in California, actually in the South Bay in California, South Bay, i.e. that's Manhattan Beach, Hermosa Beach, that kind of area for those of you who are not familiar. And we work with high-net-worth individuals, and we talk about tax strategies and things like that. And my second passion is philanthropy, and how do you marry the two? And it's one thing to accumulate wealth, and it's one thing to be involved and have accumulated a portfolio, that type of thing, but what do you do in order to make a difference? And with that, there's many ways where one can wait. The end of the year, you have until the end of the year to make a contribution to the charity of your choice. And you know what? Charitable contributions are deductible. They are deductible. So there's something for you that you can make happen if all of a sudden you're looking at that tax bill. Hey, in California, we just had a tax increase. It was voted in. And there's a way to counteract that by being more generous. So there's a little bit of a tidbit. A little bit about myself. I currently serve on a number of nonprofit boards besides my wealth management practice. Personally, my wife, she and I give time, talent, and treasure to a number of nonprofits here in our own backyard. Now, where I'm going with this today, it's not to say, oh, look at them, look what they do. Oh, gee, I can't do that. We were in the same boat as to, you know, how many times has somebody sit back and said, I'm going to help out a homeless kid or a homeless person or serve a meal or prepare a meal. You work at a rescue mission, tutor someone, work in an inner city school. There's millions of ways to get involved. Work with a Boys and Girls Club. There's so many ways to get involved. Just a matter of getting off the couch and saying yes. You don't have to have a lot of money. You can give your time. Here's some that we're involved in. Union Rescue Mission, downtown L.A. Wonderful organization. Miller Children's Hospital. If ever you wanted to have your heart wrenched, get involved. Get involved in the cancer ward of a major children's hospital, and I'll tell you, that'll change your life. L.A. Children's, same thing. South Bay Family Healthcare Clinics. That's an interesting organization that provides health care for no price, no cost at all to folks that can't afford it. Scott Newman Foundation. Many people remember Paul Newman. Well, his son Scott had an unfortunate death due to drugs, and they formed a foundation which takes inner city youth with drug issues up into the mountains. It's great. ShareFest Community Development, they get involved with the budget cuts. ShareFest will get out, and guess what they'll do? They will actually do makeovers of schools. And another interesting thing they did is at Avalon High School, they were able to increase the score dramatically of the test scores. ShareFest School, I'm on their advisory board. Now, I'll talk about individual boards. I'm on AC Green Youth Foundation, Osmo Foundation, Stanford Education LA. Reverend Cecil Chip Murray Center for Community Engagement. Proud to be on these boards. And I say this again, that Sheila and I, there's time, talent, and treasure. If you don't have the money, you can give the time. And you know what? You may have a specific talent to give to any of these organizations. They'd be glad to have you. So with that, you know what? I'm going to go to commercial break, and then I'm going to get and introduce our guest, who is a rock star in the nonprofit space. So take it away, Eric, with the commercial.
Listen to Easy Way Broadcasting shows powered by WTVNetworks.com every day of the week on Blog Talk Radio with celebrity hosts Eric Zulli, Shane Sparks, Sarah Winchester, Rick Rosman, and Mo Egger. Easy Way Broadcasting is the hottest place for music, sports, celebrity gossip, advice, and insider tips. Follow at Easy Way Broadcast. Call Easy Way Broadcasting Shows with your questions and comments at 914-338-1303.
Hello. The Rosman Experience is honored to welcome to the show Anna Arumian, who is well known in the world for her work with youth through her nonprofit organization, the Academy of Business Leadership. Anna's own life is one of survival and accomplishment. Today on Easy Way Broadcasting, you will hear her story and how she is making a difference.
Thank you, everyone.
Hello.
Let's take a minute here, and I know I'm talking over the applause. I'm on Anna's board.
Hello.
And it's an honor. Anna, going to give her a little bio here, and please bear with me, and your accomplishments. Done us all, considering where you came from, shows that we can all do it. And Anna, you're going to tell your own story in a minute. Anna just saw a need. She saw a need and started an organization that has changed the lives of thousands of young people. She's been on Montel Williams. She's been on Tyrone Banks. They've interviewed her. She knows the keynotes of power in the United States, Clinton, the White House, CEOs, there's many folks that are involved with Anna because they see what she does and how she does it. And going to graduate of UCLA, and I'm a Bruin too, she serves on many boards herself, including Harvard Women's Council. She's appeared, as I said, on many TV shows. She's connected to the top power players in the United States. And she herself has received a number of awards from the LA Times, Forbes magazine, the list goes on and on for her work, for what she's done. So of all the boards I'm on, I got to tell you, this one is really exciting, and to have Anna have asked me to be on the board, and then I get to ask her to come on the show. Welcome into the Rosman Experience. Anna, how are you today?
Good morning, Rick. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing fantastic. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Absolutely.
Okay,
we're in Beijing, so there might be a time lag. What's the weather like in L.A. today?
It's a little bit gloomy, but cheery because it's Christmas is around the corner, so I'm keeping Christmas in my heart. So I'm doing good.
Amen.
The weather is not that great, but it's a very Christmas weather, I guess. As close to Christmas as can be, since we don't have snow here in L.A.
Well, we're getting snow here in Beijing today, I'll tell you that.
Wow.
Anna,
your
history is enough to, most people would probably fold their tent and say impossible. Tell us how you, your background, your upbringing brought you to where you are today. And please share with the audience, and audience gets to call in 914-338-1303, but share with us how you came to the Academy of Business Leadership and your background, which when you hear her background, folks, you're going to say, how can this person, this amazing person, have achieved so much? Go for it, Anna.
Well, thank you, Rick. First of all, I want to thank you so much for being on my show. I'm actually on your show, my show, the Academy of Business Leadership, actually the work that we do at the Academy of Business Leadership. You've been an amazing contributor, and I'm so honored to have you. So I want to say thank you so much for all that you do for our kids, on top of all the other nonprofits, the wonderful nonprofits that you serve with your time, talent, and treasure, as you mentioned earlier. And I want to say that I'm so happy that you have the show now, that you get to really share with the world your work and get others to be excited about the wonderful work of giving back. So thank you so much, Rick. Really honored to be here today. About my
Anna, we're glad we have
a little
you.
Bit. Thank you. Thank you. So a little bit about my story. I was born in the country of Lebanon during the War of Lebanon. So from the time I opened my eyes, I remember myself being literally just in a country torn. I didn't understand the circumstances, but kind of felt like I was, unfortunately, instead of having, I say I was born feeling that I needed to be part of a party and instead of fun and having fun, instead of that, I was put in an orphanage. So I opened my eyes as a toddler in an orphanage, and that was the beginning of 11 different orphanages by the time I finished high school during the War of Lebanon. So this is kind of how my life started, and I never imagined. I thought, first of all, growing up, I couldn't even imagine myself to be alive for as long as I've been. We didn't know if we would die. This is during the Civil War of Lebanon. For me, it was normal to hear bombs every single day, literally, and many days not to go to school. I was really lucky in that I was good in school. I was put in Catholic orphanages, and I was able to push myself through to get myself skipping grades. And the nuns saw something in me, and they wanted to help me. And, of course, I was very vocal. And I can you hear me?
Yes, we
Hello?
Can. Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
I wasn't sure.
We can hear you. Yes.
Okay. So basically, in the words of one of the nuns, Sister Aida, with whom I reconnected a couple of years ago, and she lives in Turkey, Istanbul, she's Armenian, but that's where she was born. And she said to me, because I used to say proudly that I could have had an education up to the fifth grade growing up in Beirut. And she said to me, no, actually, you were destined to a second grade level education. Now, education didn't come easy, even though, you know, because we were put in these orphanages, and I had no idea if the nuns would be able to keep us, because they were not obligated to keep us. My mom was sick. She is bipolar, and I know a lot of people have issues around the disease. I say it because it's important to bring awareness also, and to say that you can still have a normal life as children of bipolar people. My dad was an alcoholic, unfortunately, and my mom left him, and later he died in the war. So my aunt and my uncle did not want to do anything with us. They did not want to help us. And actually, my uncle put me and my sister in a cab and sent us an hour and a half away to an orphanage. That's like the permanent orphanage, an Armenian Catholic orphanage. And that's where I say my institutionalization began, in that space. And being in that orphanage in particular, I remember feeling completely like a prisoner. And I felt that I didn't have a choice ever of escaping that life. I was reminded daily that I couldn't amount to anything, even though I was smart, that kids like me, from my background, there was no hope for us, no guarantees for an education. And that's where I wanted the first part of my life, I wanted to be a nun. Actually, I figured if I couldn't beat the nuns at the time, I could join them. There were a couple of really good nuns, especially Sister Ida. This amazing woman showed up one day, very young, and she saw the conditions we were living under, and she decided that she wanted to do something about it. I was really inspired by her, and I decided at the age of 5 that I wanted to be a nun. At the age of 6, she had me have a meeting with the Mother Superior from Rome. At the age of 8, the Mother Superior was very touched by the meeting with me. God bless her soul, Mother Ermine. She decided to open a school for little girls in Zahle to send me to become a nun. I was sent to become a nun. I was about 8, roughly. I don't know exactly when I was born, but I'm just kind of approximating based on years or experiences and whatnot or memories I have from the time. And I was the youngest one. I was there. I studied to become a nun for 3 years. So you can say, in terms of where did all of this begin, I was very excited at the beginning because I wanted to serve, and I wanted to be, in my own experience, again, I wanted to serve Jesus. I wanted to live a life of prayer. I figured I could change the world that way. And then at the age of roughly 11 or so, I decided, okay, I didn't want to be a nun because I didn't like certain things. You know, I was a little girl. I didn't understand everything. And in a little girl's mind, everything is there is no gray area. It's only either black or white, and I didn't understand anything in between. So, but I began really studying philosophy, psychology. I read Nietzsche when I was about 12. I read Khalil Gibran, and I studied psychology in high school. And I wanted to, at that point, I realized that I wanted to understand more or less my condition. I wanted to understand the cruelty around me. I wanted to understand the suffering around me. I wanted to understand the meaning of life. And I was a very angry kid, understandably, because I felt it was unfair and unfortunate that millions of people had to suffer, and I had not seen a day of peace since I opened my eyes in Lebanon. And I decided at that point, I started thinking, you know, I want to leave Lebanon because I cannot have a life here as a girl, even as a Christian girl. But in that society, girls were not necessarily, especially at that time, there wasn't much opportunity, let alone for a kid who's growing up, you know, in a classist society in orphanages. So absolutely there was no future for me. And I set my mind on France and a priest that I had reconnected with through another nun. He put the idea of America in my mind. And he reminded me that Sister Ida from my first orphanage was now in Glendale, California. Couldn't even speak a word of English at the time. Are you there? I'm sorry. Are you interrupting
me? I'm here. We're listening. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm hearing. Okay. I wasn't sure if you were asking me something. Okay. So Father Raphael put the thought of America in my mind. I remember thinking, my gosh, I could never go to America. I can never speak that language, that weird nasal language. And he tested me, Annie, that was my name as a kid. Well, you speak all these languages. What's another one? And, you know, when you're young, that's all you need to hear, someone believing in you. And even though Father Raphael later changed his mind because he saw that there was no way for me to get a visa as a young girl with no money, no sponsors, on my own trying to get a visa to the United States. But by then, for me, in my head, the train had already left, and I said, you know, I am going to do everything I can to try to get a visa to America. And I get on this journey. I think God works in mysterious ways. When we have this burning desire for something, and some of the listeners may be aware of the movie The Secret and The Law of Attraction, and having now these, at least the intellectual framework around some of the language we can understand, now I can decode as to how things happened for me that I was able to attract the circumstances for me to be in America today. And I had really this burning desire to leave Lebanon. And that one particular summer, the nuns at this other one of my 11 schools, 11 to 13, the 11 that I can name, we got kicked out, my sister and I, from the school, and literally we were homeless that summer as young girls on the streets during the war in bombs, going from home to home and not knowing if, you know, we would have a place to stay. And I remember waiting anxiously for Father Raphael to come back from New York, and when he got back, He said he would do anything. He took a chance upon us, my sister and I, and he said, you know, I'll see what I can do. And he put us with this family that used to work at the Armenian Catholic Patriarchy. We stayed with them. And luck would have it that their son had not visited from America, living in America, had not visited in 12 years. He decided to come that particular Christmas, around the season, actually. Yes, and he had not come for 12 years to visit his family. During the bombing, he decided the worst, at the height of the war, to come visit his family. So now you can imagine that was the first time. And I'm already in my head thinking, how am I going to go to America? So I had been planning and plotting, and I would sit literally in the staircase with the, if I had gotten a hold of a friend who was working for the TOEFL office in Lebanon, and he would give me these books about these universities in America, and I would flip pages, 15,000, 20,000. I'd be saying, oh my gosh, I could never afford it. I wish someone could adopt me. Okay, 30,000. How am I going to do this? Well, maybe I could go work as a maid somewhere. Wouldn't that be nice? But how am I going to get to America? So literally, this is how it spent, and bombs going off in the wild, in, you know, nearby, and be thinking, oh my gosh. And we're hiding in the staircase because we didn't have a shelter. So in that kind of condition, that's when this gentleman showed up, and I asked him, so tell me about America, and he told me about, I asked him my first question, what are the good universities and where you live? He said he lived in Hollywood, and of course I had heard of Hollywood, and I said, what's the connection between Hollywood and, let's say, Glendale? And he said, well, that's 15 minutes away. And my little girl's mind, I'm like, oh, 15 minutes. So you must know Sister Ida, because I thought everybody in America, it must be just like Lebanon, very close by. And he said, no, I don't know Sister Ida. Well, I asked him if he would go back and ask her if she could help me, because she had promised to help one day when I was with Father Raphael, and he put this out of America in my mind. We called Sister Ida, and Sister Ida said she would help. So, of course, I thought that that would happen. Now, Sister Ida wanted to help, but it's not that simple, as you can imagine, to get a visa to come to America. So he decided to come back for Easter. He left around after Christmas, and he came back. And this time, really, the war had taken on a whole new way and level. Bombs became more sophisticated. They had these bombs that would enter an apartment and would blow up inside, killing everything inside. So the war became very vicious, and the arms that they were using even more vicious. And, I mean, imagine, I remember myself as a kid when I would go visit my aunt during Christmas from the orphanage. We would be playing with grenades. My cousins were very young, 13, 14, 12. They were fighting in the Christian militia faction. And this is the kind of childhood I would be collecting bullets, different shapes, you know, shapes and sizes of bullets. I mean, just now thinking back, I'm just amazed as to, oh, my gosh, what a paradigm. What a paradigm. Definitely not a paradigm to create any sense of peace and paradigm for trauma. And I say this because as I'm speaking to you, Rick, you and I know, and our listeners, that there are millions of kids around the world suffering and struggling. And there are hundreds of thousands of people right now caught in war and condemned, that they feel that they don't have any say over, that they cannot change. So back to when I was in with this gentleman, he came back for Easter, and I asked him, did you ask Sister Ida, what did she say? Can she help me? And he said to me, Annie, I talked to her, but she seemed busy. She didn't say much. And I swear, the first thing I thought in my head, just as if a voice I heard in my head that said to me, help yourself and Sister Ida will help you. I wasn't angry, and I was surprised at my reaction, given how young I was. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't get angry. I didn't get mad. I thought, you know, I guess I need to do something about it. And that's when I decided to go get the visa by myself. And then I... luck would have it again, this family knew someone from Cyprus, the country of Cyprus, who knew someone who worked at the American embassy. And this woman said, when we went to Cyprus, because that we, this gentleman, his wife was calling him every day, asking him to come back to America. She was really worried sick with her children about him. So this woman, where we were staying, the sister of this man, we all decided to go to Cyprus because I said, I want to go to Cyprus and try to get a visa since we didn't have an American embassy in Lebanon. So I had never been outside of Lebanon, you can imagine. And my scholarship that year, instead of coming in the September, as it would have come from this Armenian, it was called Gulbenkian, I believe, fund. Instead of coming in September, it came in March. So I had $700. I decided to use some of that money to get a ticket to go to Cyprus. By the time I spent everything, I got the visa, and I came to America, I had $160 left. That's what I came with, from that money. It was amazing.
That's incredible. That's an incredible story. Yeah, I mean, did you feel like giving up? Did you feel like the world was I mean, I didn't hear I didn't hear the word no in there. I didn't hear the word
no.
I can't do it. I didn't hear any of that. And you were responsible for your sister, too. I mean, my God, what a load.
Yes. Yes, and actually what I said to myself, I never imagined, and I can say this honestly, I never thought no. What I thought in my head, if America says no to me, the embassy, because when we showed up, this is what's even more miraculous, and I want to say this for the viewers, I mean the listeners in this case, so that they understand that you cannot stop halfway. Having first a burning desire, second, going all the way towards whatever your vision is, because some, even if it's imperfect, even if you don't know how it's going to pan out, just taking that first step. So in my mind, even though I was so young, but I feel blessed that, to me, you know, I'm a person of faith, that God put these thoughts in my head that I was able to just kind of go all the way through. Because this lady that I was living with, she wanted to go to America too. She took her passport with her. But when she heard from this gentleman, her friend in Cyprus, when we called his friend, who was working for the American consul general, and she said, it's impossible. They're not going to get a visa. There's no way. There are lines here. People have been waiting for weeks. This is at the height of the war of Lebanon. They're not going to get through. I mean, you're wasting your time. And I believe the gentleman looked at me as he was talking to her on the phone and probably saw something in my eyes. And he said, so why don't you just give her a chance to come and try? I went the next to talk to her the same day, and she said to me, do you see these lions? And I said, yes. She said, you're not going to get through. I said, can I at least come back tomorrow morning and let me just try? She said, sure. I showed up the next day at 8 a.m. I stood in line, and she said, you know, 99% chance you're not going to get a visa. And I'm going to tell you, Rick, I was one of four people that day. Instead of the consul general, like the consulate closing at 12 like it was, it closed at 2 or 3 p.m., and I was one of the last four people to get through. And I was the only one outside of another gentleman who had a green card to get a visa that day. It was amazing.
Oh, my God.
It was absolutely a miracle. Now, you can imagine when we got back, this lady where I was staying, the lady Sylvia, she was upset because she didn't even try to get a visa. She gave up before even trying. And now I'm going to tell you, I have decided in my mind, my plan A was America. My plan B, to stay in Cyprus, sleep on the streets if I had to, because she wanted to go to Ayanapa to have a vacation. I was determined to stay in Cyprus and knock on every single embassy and see who would take me, even if it meant going to India. Literally, I remember thinking, I will go to India. I'm not going back to Lebanon. I cannot go back to that life. I cannot go back to this uncertainty. And that's when, you know, we left Lebanon, just to give you an idea of the conditions. There was a war going on. We were not supposed to leave. We took a boat, small boat, into the international waters, into a bigger boat. And by the time I got back, after I got the visa, we had to go to northern Lebanon because there was fighting. And when I fled for good Lebanon, because we were not supposed to leave, I literally fled Lebanon. They had like an embargo. You could not leave, and it was illegal. I had to take another boat, and a baby had died the day before in the water as they were transitioning or transferring all the goods and people and, you know, bags and whatnot, luggage, from one little boat to the bigger boat. I mean, the conditions, the Syrians were bombing us at the time, and so they had to have flashlights. They couldn't have even lights until they got to international waters. I mean, conditions were not good, and it was really dangerous, but I didn't care. So now, when I got back, I had made a deal with Father Raphael. I had asked him if he would pay for my, of course, before trying to get the visa. He had given up on America for me because he thought I could never get a visa. He said, you would be wasting your time. Your idea was first to go to France. That was my thought. I thought, I speak fluent French. Why not go to France? And he said to me, why not America? And that's when everything changed. And so he said to me, go to France. I'll help you. And I said, no, Father, it's too late. I'm going to try America now. And so when I got back, I couldn't sleep that night. I was so excited. At 5 a.m., I set out an hour walking from the town we lived to where Father Raphael was. At 6:30 a.m., I was at his door. He came out in his pajamas, and I said, Father, is everything okay? I mean, he was worried. And I said, yes, Father, but I want to tell you that I didn't get a visa. And he looked at me, and he said, I see it in your eyes, you stubborn little girl. You did get a visa. I said, yes, and I came to make sure you're going to pay for it, like you promised me. Remember, you promised to pay for my ticket to America, right?
He said,
okay, of course, I will pay for your ticket to America. So that's how my journey began, and I came here. I had no guarantees. I slept in a classroom in Glendale. Of course, this gentleman, Aram, I called him when I got the visa from Cyprus on my way to America. I called him on my way from America, and I said, if he could pick me up, ask him if he could come pick me up from the airport, and he did. I stayed with his family for a week. or two, and then I called Sister Ida, and she came pick me up, and then I was, they didn't have a school at the time, the Armenian Sisters of Glendale, they had the, it was called the Armenian Sisters Academy of Los Angeles, they had classrooms, and then I remember my first night sleeping in a classroom in Glendale when I moved to stay with Sister Ida, and this house, it was in a house on the street, and you can imagine, that was a quite weird and scary experience for me because it was window from the floor to ceiling, and you could see people walking by on Riverdale Drive. So that was scary. And the biggest shock that I felt in America really was that there were no bombs, that it was too quiet. I felt it was really too quiet, and that was my culture shock, really.
Anna, what? That is an incredible story. And I think we have a caller, call on 1060. Caller, why don't you call in and tell us to ask a question of Anna or make a comment.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, you're on.
Oh, it's Victoria.
Hi, what's your name?
Victoria.
Hi, Victoria. How are you?
I'm good. Like, I'm just now coming in. So, like, I really, really don't know what the conversation is because I just came out of the movie theater from seeing
Oh,
Ancient
okay.
with my son. But,
okay.
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I just came out from seeing Monsters, Inc. with my son. So,
oh,
like,
that's nice. How was the movie? Did you guys have fun?
Yeah, it was good. My son loved it. He enjoyed it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, well,
okay.
Well, Victoria, the story is about survival and making a difference. So why don't you hang up and listen to Anna's story. She's going to talk about how she's made a difference with kids here at the Academy of Business Leadership. Victoria, have a good holiday, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Happy holidays,
right.
Victoria. Thanks for calling. Okay. When I came, as I said with Sister Ida, she helped me go to Laban. I transferred myself to UCLA. Sister Ida said at the time that I should stay at Laban, and I liked the idea of staying. Well, actually, I didn't like the idea of staying at Laban. I liked the idea of going to a bigger school, and that's how I transferred myself to UCLA. I remember buying, oh my goodness, I would not, actually, I would make sure that others don't do this. I went and I got cash from my credit card. At the time, I thought it was free money. But surely it was not free money. I took money out of my credit card and I bought a car. And I drove, I've never driven a stick shift all the way from Laverne to UCLA. It took me 6 hours. And I transferred myself to the sorority house, the same house that I was staying in at Laverne. And I was able to go to UCLA. It was a struggle, Rick, I have to tell you. But I kept, the way I kept myself busy, and I had no contact with my sister. This is during the war. There were no phones. I didn't know where my mom was. My sister and my mom had lost each other during the war. For 5 years, very limited contact, no internet yet, and no cell phone. And I remember thinking, my goodness, you know, of course I was worried about my younger sister, but I kept myself busy by giving back and being involved in the community. And it's during this time that I discovered the joys of giving back and the joys of making a difference. And I realized, wow, how nice it is that in America you get to do that. And I got involved with AmeriCorps, President Clinton's, at the time, Domestic Peace Corps. And I was one of the first young people at the time in AmeriCorps. And I did that for 2 years. Then I was a governor's executive fellow in speech writing for the Attorney General. And one day at a basketball game at UCLA, I came across the chair at the time of the board of ABL, the Academy of Business Leadership. And I was looking to transition into something else because my dream when I came to America was to go and work in New York, work for Goldman Sachs, and become a billionaire and give back. That was my idea. I saw myself as a one day becoming like a Rockefeller or a Carnegie and Ford and amass amazing wealth and give back. But I guess God, life would have it differently. This gentleman, Pete Hernandez, who is now again on a second stint on the board, he got off the board and came back. He told me, well, actually, I didn't know that there was an opportunity. He followed up with me, and basically, even then, I remember they had selected someone else, but I asked him if he could wait until they interviewed me, and I convinced them to give me the job, even though I was very young, in my early 20s, and didn't have any experience of running nonprofits, although I had done a lot of internships and a lot of leadership opportunities. I ran a lot of programs at UCLA and outside. I interned for President Reagan in Century City. I interned for a U.S. senator at the time. So I had done a lot of different things. So when I came to ABL, the organization was very different. The mission was very different. The vision, there was, of course, a vision, but I felt the mission and the work was not in alignment with the mission. The mission and vision supposedly was to get young people more into investment-related fields. And it was a great vision, actually, that the founder had at the time, Rick Yamamoto, and the organization's house at Southern California Edison. And it was doing really good work. 400 kids had graduated by then. But when I came, because of my background, I was able to see perhaps things that others had not seen. And what I saw is an opportunity to really help young people to discover their inner greatness. For me, it wasn't just about giving jobs, and that's kind of it has evolved into getting these young people to perhaps get some skills and move on to have jobs and survive. For me, it wasn't just about survival. It became about how do we get these young people to unleash their full potential, to shift their own perceptions, their own sense of empowerment, to change how they saw first themselves as leaders now versus 20 years from now, to give back and to see that the world is their oyster, that they can do anything. They can go to Harvard University if they want to. They can go to any school. They can achieve the seemingly impossible. So we shifted the vision, the mission, the methodology. I brought in MBA graduates from top business schools like Harvard Business School, Wharton, Stanford, to teach the kids. I changed the whole business model, changed the entire setup of the organization, and got a lot of amazing people involved. You mentioned some of them earlier when you were introducing me. So, and people like you, and you've been involved with the organization for how many years now, Rick?
I've been involved, personally, I think I've been involved with your organization probably 6 years and on the board for about a year.
Yes, exactly. So the first time you volunteered, because you used to host our kids with, I don't know if I can mention the name of the organization.
No, we can't mention organizations.
Okay,
that's okay, but
the old organization. So you used to host my kids. It's okay. Rick used to host my kids in his office, and he was the executive in that office, and he would bring in other executives and other speakers to inspire the kids. And it was such a lovely, and Rick's group was one of many other organizations involved, like the Capital Group, Edison, and many others who support us, PIMCO, State Street, Union Bank, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, who would host the kids into their offices to help them to, you know, basically see themselves in their shoes and to see themselves achieving amazing things. So this is pretty much how I got involved in ABL and how I, you know, we got to where we're at. So this is 14 years ago,
Anna,
14 years later.
I got it.
We have graduated 2,900 kids who have gone through the program, and 110,000 kids have gone through our workshops at hundreds of middle and high schools across Southern California.
Anna, the numbers are staggering. Now, let me ask you a question. I know you keep track. How many of these kids have finished high school, and how many go on to college?
Oh, my gosh. I am so proud of these statistics, Rick. Thank you for asking. 100% of our kids graduate from high school. 99.9% of them go on to colleges and universities nationwide. And let me give you the statistics nationally. 75% of kids graduate from high school versus ours, 100%. 63% to 68% for all kids go on nationally to colleges and universities. 99.9% of our kids go on to universities. In terms of college graduation rates, nationally, 42%. For Latinos, 19%. For African Americans, 29%. Our numbers, anecdotally, we're doing right now a survey to basically get the exact numbers of college graduation rates, but I can tell you because I keep in touch with a lot of the kids through Facebook and they keep in touch with me. I can tell you anecdotally at least 90% of our kids graduate from college. So our numbers are quite amazing. And most of our kids are basically underserved, low income. And traditionally, we haven't necessarily targeted the high GPAs, although, you know, over the last 2 years, I've seen GPAs go up a lot more. but 50% of our kids have below 3.5 GPA, and 50% above 3.5 GPA, and most of our kids are of minority background. Although we mix them up now with some high-income kids, because I think it's important for them to learn from each other, and that's what makes our numbers even more staggering and amazing because of the student population that we serve.
Anna, that is just an amazing. By the way, we're coming to you from the Rosman Experience. Call-in number, folks, is 914-338-1303 if anybody has any calls. We're at the end of the year, and for those of you, you know, looking for some financial advice and you're looking at taxes and things like that, nonprofits can be a way to go. And, Anna, what can anybody who's listening out there, what is it that you think – walk our audience through what you need now to make this organization even better than what you going forward for the next 10 years. What can anybody on the phone do to help you out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're always, as you know, these are tough times economically speaking for all of us, and we can use donations because we basically survive on donations. We charge now fees for the kids on a sliding scale, but that makes up about 10 to 15% of our budget, and the rest I have to go out there and raise from different individuals like you and organizations and companies that have been very generous, but still we have, you know, like most nonprofits out there, shortfalls in these times. Things have changed a little bit, and so generous people who are looking for tax write-offs or just want to give, they don't really care. A lot of people don't care about the recognition. If you could please go on our website, www.goabl.org, so www.goabl.org, and go on, donate now, and hit the PayPal button, and, you know, if you can make a contribution, every bit helps. We'd really appreciate it. If you'd like to volunteer, you can send me an email. And we are always looking for individuals to come and inspire the kids. We're looking for mentors. We're looking for business plan judges. The kids, like, I didn't tell you what the kids do in the program. They write full-length business plans. They manage fictitious stock portfolios. They're on college campuses. They visit CEOs of Fortune 500 companies and senior executives. They have an amazing experience. There isn't another program like ours in the entire country. And on top of it, we do college prep, and we focus on mindset shifting. I think that's what makes us really quite special as an organization, because for me, it's about how do you shift the mindset of kids from their disempowering, limiting beliefs to empowering beliefs so that you can have lasting change. That's why our kids can go after the program and survive on their own. So if you'd like to be involved in any way, want to learn more, please send me an email at Anna_Urumian@yahoo.com, and we will make sure to follow up with you and see how we can have you be involved with ABL.
Anna, I got to tell you, your story is one of hope. It's one of inspiration. It's one of can do. Personally, folks, I've been involved in people with and why. Everybody out there, because there are hedge fund judges, there are private equity fund judges who sit in judging, and they are looking around and saying, you know what, some of these business plans that these young people come up with are state of the art, and it's just a matter of giving them the opportunity. We've all been fortunate enough to host some of Anna's kids in the offices that I've managed over the years. Just wonderful, wonderful kids. I've been able to, Anna's tapped me a few times to give speeches to the kids and be part of the program. My ask of anybody out there is, look, it's one thing, we're at a new year, make the plan, make the goal, and if you want to get involved in something that really has the statistics to back it up, that you can get involved, contact Anna, go on the website. You know, time, talent, and treasure, there's room for all three. And believe me, I've been involved in all three, and it's just a wonderful organization. Anna, I want to thank you today for taking the time out. Merry, Merry Christmas to you, and happy holidays, and holidays to our listening audience. And Anna, why don't you close it and talk about, why don't you just say one kid that was impossible that maybe you made a difference and what they're doing now. Why don't you just say that's how we'll close.
Go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much. I have many stories like that, but I would like to tell the story of one particular person, young person. Her name is Vanessa. Vanessa came to us. She was in high school, her last year in high school, actually, but 200 units behind with a 1.3, 1.5 GPA, basically just destined for a life of no future. And a young Latina, beautiful on the inside and out, but completely lost and living in an abusive home. Her dad is now homeless and abusive and being raised by a single mom, being crammed in a one-bedroom apartment with her siblings and just not seeing where could all of this lead her. I'm happy to say that she did the program. It completely turned her around. I became her mentor. I gave her a job at ABL as an intern. And she's the one actually who nominated me to the Tyra and Montel, and that's how I got involved in those shows. And since then, Vanessa caught up with all her classes. She got all straight A's, graduated from high school with 3.8 GPA from her continuation high school, transferred to Pasadena City College, actually went to Pasadena City College, maintained a 3.8, 3.9 GPA, transferred to UCLA, and she's about to graduate. I saw her last Sunday, and she's planning. She shared her story with my new book of Bold Kids, which is a follow-up program to the Summer Business and Leadership Institute. Bold is another program. We have year-round programs, so you can be involved with us year-round. And she shared with them that now she's looking at applying to law school and a business school simultaneously. And it's remarkable to me, someone who, this young person clearly had tremendous potential. All she needed was for someone to believe in her and give her a chance and for her to turn her life around. Now, I know a lot of folks out there think that, you know, being involved with kids in high school, my kids come from inner city schools and even all to the wealthiest schools. We're going to have this upcoming summer, kids from Lakeside and Turkey and other countries, they'll come from the inner cities to the wealthiest schools and working together. A lot of people from middle school, elementary school, and high school. A lot of folks out there think that it's too late to get involved with high school kids. I would like to politely disagree. It's never too late to get involved with any youngster, because even if they're senior in high school, we can still change their lives. Like, not just myself, hundreds of us changed Vanessa's life. And for every Vanessa, there are hundreds of other stories out there. So please get involved, whether it's with us or another organization. You have the power to make a difference. And in so many kids' lives, many kids, and hopefully you'll be joining us soon. Thank you.
Anna, thank you so much for sharing that wonderful story about Vanessa. Folks, that's what it's all about. How many Vanessas are there out there that aren't being helped because we have chosen not to get involved? We've all come up with our excuses. It's easier to write a check. We can take checks. We can take your time. We can take your talent. We can take all three. But if you get off the couch and make a difference, look what Anna has done with Vanessa and multiply that by thousands. Our high school graduation rate in the inner city is terrible. And unless we do something about it, and that's what Anna is working in the trenches, unless we do something about it, we're going really backwards as a country. When you have less than half the kids from the inner city schools graduate, Anna is making a difference. Anna, thank you so much for being on the show today. God bless you. God bless everything that you do. I'm a supporter and will remain so. And I wish you the best holidays. And thank you so much, and goodbye.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rick. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me. And happy holidays to you as well. Hope to see you soon.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
All right. See you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye.
Join the 500,000 Twitter followers who have discovered Eric Zulli's newest project, Easy Way Broadcasting, powered by WTVNetworks.com on Blog Talk Radio. Find the most up-to-date info on his show, Easy Talk, which airs every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, by following his Twitter sites at Easy Way Broadcast and at Eric Zulli. Easy connects listeners with their favorite celebrities and Hollywood insiders who are doing it the easy way. And you can, too. Talk to Eric during the show at 914-338-1303.
Hey, okay, guys, you've been listening to the Rosman Experience. I'm your man, Hollywood It Guy, Eric Zuli, owner and operator of Easy Way Broadcasting. I hope you guys really enjoyed that show. And tune in next week to Sarah's Secrets. She has some wonderful secrets for you. 3 p.m. Wednesday Pacific Standard Time. 3 p.m. Wednesday Pacific Standard Time, only on Easy Way Broadcasting. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll hear you next week. Remember, you can always follow us at Easy Way Broadcast and follow Rick Rosman 1 on Twitter. So we will see you and hear you next week. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.